Hello, everyone. This is your girl, Shade, reporting live from Wit and STEM Podcast. And welcome to episode 4 of our series, How It Started versus How It's Going. I'm very excited for today's episode. I have Dr. Parshati Patel with me today, all the way from Canada. And thank you so much for joining us. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
I know I'm excited. I know our listeners will be very excited too. So before we start, one of the things we do on the podcast is to allow our guests to introduce themselves, basically unapologetically telling our listeners who you are, what you do, if you want to share any accomplishments, what you're proud of, all the good stuff. This is your time to shine. So the floor is yours.
Awesome. Thank you so much. So hi, everyone. My name is Parshati Patel. I'm an educational outreach and communication specialist at the Institute for Earth and Space Exploration at Western University in London, Ontario, Canada. That's where I reside. But my background is actually in astronomy. So I got my PhD approximately 4 years ago in astrophysics and in planetary science and space exploration. You know, it was my passion to study astronomy. And along the way, I kind of realized during my PhD that I love to obviously do research, but then at the same time, I loved talking about how amazing space is and like just wanting to share my passion. So I kind of developed these skills to go on to become a science communicator. So that's kind of what I'm doing right now. And, you know, I have loved every aspect of my research and STEM background that I have, you know, in physics and astronomy, as well as in planetary science. But I also now have background in science communication that involves a lot of different fields, including a lot of STEM fields as well, because you're communicating science. So, you know, those are some of my most favorite things to talk about is space and science and all things to do with STEM. I also love, as a person of color, I have loved talking about my journey. I have loved talking about things I had to overcome because I was an immigrant when I came to study my undergraduate degree. So, you know, I have lived in Canada now for 14 years and I've, you know, grown myself into this science communicator and an astrophysicist. And I'm really happy about how things turned out for me.
Great. Wow. Thank you, Dr. Patel. And thank you for being a pioneer for females in STEM. You know, people of color are underrepresented in the STEM field. But when we talk about women representation, that's a whole different story. There's just not enough of us. So I definitely appreciate you being a trailblazer for females in STEM.
Thank you so much. I think, you know, one of the things I did realize when I was very young and wanted to go into this field was not seeing someone like me, not having, that role model who was kind of doing exactly what I wanted to do. And obviously I had to kind of fan around and try to find someone who looked like me doing something related to their field that I wanted to go in, but not exactly the same field. So, you know, initiatives like yours are very important to give girls and people of color, those people who have gone through this and people who can inspire them and tell them that, yes, they can do it and they should be doing it, you know, if that's their passion.
Definitely. Thank you. So before we get into the questions today, I know our listeners are probably wondering, astrophysicist, what's that? And personally, this is my first time meeting someone in the field, so I'm very intrigued. Can you explain what an astrophysicist is and what a typical day is like?
Yeah, so an astrophysicist is someone who uses physics, math, chemistry, kind of a mixture of all of those kinds of subjects to study things that are in outer space. So this could be planets, stars, galaxies, you know, the local group of galaxies, basically, these are a whole bunch of galaxies that are kind of almost together, moving through space, any of those kinds of objects in and around everything that exists, all of those things are something that we astronomers or astrophysicists study. And the coolest aspect is that you can do it in multiple ways. You can, you know, you can come in from an from a chemistry background, you can come in from a math background, you can come in from physics background, or you could be doing multiple of those at the same time. And so it's a very fascinating subject if you're interested in wanting to know how things grow to be what they are and how, you know, they live and die just like humans. You know, stars and planets all have their life cycles, and so if you want to understand that process, that's when you would study astronomy or astrophysics. And you know, like my typical day when I used to do research is very, it depends on different astrophysicists, because a lot of people you know, do computational astrophysics, which means, you know, they're basically using computer models to create the stars and, you know, planets and try to model those kinds of things in their computers. And then there are people who do observational astrophysics as well, which means they go out and get observations, come back, then, you know, they model those and compare the two. And so I was kind of the combination of the two. I was a little bit more leaning towards computational. So most of my days would look like, you know, sitting in front of a computer, which I did not imagine I would be doing that when I was young. And I thought I was going to study space, which means I'm going to get to hang out outside all the time. Wasn't the case. Yeah, yeah. Right. Or just, you know, hang my telescope and kind of look up. But it didn't end up happening that way most of the time. Was because, you know, like my research included studying young stars and how they form, and I was able to actually recreate them in my computer. And so most of my time was actually spent on my computer trying to run those models, develop those things. Once in a while, you know, I would have to work on grants and or proposals, because, you know, there are only so many telescopes around the world. So time to time, I would have to write, you know, compete with other people across the world trying to get those kinds of, you know, time on the telescopes to get that data. And unfortunately, it's not like what it was in the back in the day, you know, where observational astronomers would be able to go out and take, you know, data from all of these amazing telescopes. Nowadays, you just sit back, they do the observation for you, and they send it to you, which is, you know, not as much fun, but it's exciting to have those results and then be able to use computer models for that. But basically, most of my days were like sitting in front of a computer.
But the work you're doing is very cool, so I know it's definitely worth it.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So what made you pursue a degree career in STEM? Like, what age were you introduced? Did you have family members in your team that influenced you, or did you have mentors that you inspired to be?
Yeah, so I think science, I don't really remember when first, like, I learned about science. Like, I guess I was really young that I don't remember anymore. And I think one of the reasons probably was that because my mom was a microbiologist. Like, you know, she did her training. She never really, you know, when she got married, she never really worked in a lab or anything. But she was like, you know, always had her biology books around and still, you know, and I would still be like, you know, reading, even though I was very young, try to figure out what those are. Never really understood. But my mom always also, you know, encouraged us to get books. So I remember from a very young age that my, you know, my parents would get me books for anything, you know, I would ask for, as in any questions I would ask for. And so, you know, I was interested in all aspects. I had history books and geography books and, you know, arts and all of these different kinds of topics. But I guess the time when I got really interested and started thinking about it, you know, possibly having a career in a STEM subject was my first actual visit to a planetarium. And it was just really a family vacation. You know, we were taking to this big city and they had a planetarium, and we were like, oh, you know, that's like one of the touristy things you do. And so we went there, and that was the first time that I learned about, you know, galaxies and, you know, the night sky and all of those kinds of space related information. And at the end of that tour, I remember that I was telling my mom, I'm like, oh, I have more questions. And my mom is like, I don't know how to answer them. And so she just sent me to like the gift store that they have at these planetariums. And I remember buying like these bunch of books, which obviously I did not think about that. Yeah, like I'm like, you know, almost about to be a teenager. Like I don't know a lot of deep physics. And I guess I picked up three or four books that one of them I distinctly remember talked about the Big Bang and how the universe formed. And I like understood nothing about it.
Yeah.
And that kind of triggered more questions. And so my parents just are like, oh, here is money, go buy books, you know, because they did not know much about it. So so my mom, like, and my parents, like, they always encouraged just asking questions and, you know, using books. And again, I come from a time with hardly any internet kind of thing, right? So books were kind of our main source of information. And so I always used those as kind of, you know, an inspiration to learn more. But I guess, you know, one of the things which is very interesting is that when I was growing up, I didn't really know any female astronomers, you know, who looked like me. So I didn't really have someone who was a role model in this particular field. However, I did have, you know, Kalpana Chawla was this Indian American who was the first, you know, female Indian American to go to space. And she was the one I saw when I was growing up. And I was like, oh, you know, like, I want to be like her. But I didn't really want to be an astronaut. I really wanted to study the formation process and how things work rather than building things and going to space. So, you know, she was a role model, but in a way that, oh, you know, she looks like me, she's a brown person, she did it, so, you know, I can also do that. I kind of took that from her, though in particular, I didn't have anyone in astronomy until like very late into my PhD. So, you know, it is good to have someone who is closely related to your area where you want to go in, but it doesn't have to be. All you really need is an inspiration to be like what they are. And go for what they have done, you know, their passion.
Yes, definitely. And it's amazing to hear how your parents encouraged you to ask questions and gave you money to go and get books. You know, that's truly amazing that you had a support system even at an early age.
Yeah, definitely. That made a lot of difference, I think.
And can you briefly describe any challenges that you faced while in school? This can either be, you know, your PhD program or earlier as a person of color majoring in science. And how did you overcome it?
Yeah, so I think one thing I mentioned, I came to Canada to do my undergrad. And before that, like back home, I grew up, you know, studying in an English medium school, but obviously like, it's very different from the English that people speak here. So when I did move here to do my undergrad, I realized, A, there aren't really very, very many people who look like me. But then the second aspect, which I think was one of the toughest things in the first couple of years, was even though I was able to speak English and, you know, I was very fluent when I was back home, when I came here, suddenly I felt like people were talking too fast. I couldn't really understand the accent. And I was like really struggling to know if, like, you know, if I talk, are people understanding what I'm saying? Like, you know, or are people going to feel weird because, like, I don't speak like them? You know, so like those kinds of things, like in the first couple of years, it was very hard for me to kind of open up. And I was a completely extrovert person back home. The moment I came here, I was just like very aware that, you know, I'm different, people don't really look like me, and they don't sound like me. And so it took me a couple of years. And it really took, you know, some of my, you know, getting to know people and just pushing that boundary of like, you know, I just got to talk, like, and you know, if they don't like me, if they don't like my accent, that's fine, like, I'll move on, I'll find other people, you know, who'll be okay listening to me. So I think in the undergrad, and to start off, I think that was one of the most, I guess, important thing, or I guess, hard thing that I had to overcome. And, you know, in astronomy, you generally get, you know, at undergraduate level, you generally get a lot of people from different, you know, ethnicities and stuff like that. But as you move on to PhD, you know, again, it was similar, like I wasn't seeing as many people of color, And you know, right now when I work in this particular field, I see around and literally I go to conferences and I look around the room and being like, okay, so in student population, there are many, but when it comes to like management and leadership, there are hardly any people of color, you know, which itself is very hard, you know, and the only real way to overcome is encourage more people and, you know, get them to come with you.
Yes, yes, definitely. As you climb up the ladder, bring somebody else with you. So in college, were you part of any STEM clubs? And if so, did they, you know, help you land your dream job?
Yeah, so in my undergrad, actually, one of the ones actually was able to talk and make friends. you know, one of my friends, she encouraged me to join the student astronomy club on campus. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of my first time meeting people who were in my class, you know, and these were people from all different kinds of degrees that were coming in and who liked space. And I was, you know, starting to learn about different things people can do with space. And I was, you know, I started with volunteering with the club, and I ended up becoming the outreach director for the club by the time I graduated. Nice. And it really gave me that network of people that I could talk to, and, you know, who had similar interests, and some were really advanced in their careers. You know, some people were who had passed on and moved into kind of industry and were still helping with the society. So they really gave me that perspective of what you could do with your degree. You know, I did end up, you know, going to master's and my PhD, but that outreach director role kind of stuck with me because I got to talk to people in that role. And so when I was in my master's, my PhD, you know, when I got an opportunity to talk to people, now I was completely back into my normal self that I was back home in India, where I now was okay and open to talk to people. So I guess, you know, the clubs actually gave me get that confidence to talk to people, and that the director position did give me, you know, that network of people that I could talk. And that really helped me, you know, kickstarting kind of this career of science communication, even as an undergrad, which I didn't really realize until I started doing this job and being like, well, you know, my first time ever doing something like this was actually an undergrad. So, you know, that club actually really helped me.
Nice. Yeah, I definitely encourage people to join clubs in college. Not only are you able to network with like-minded people, but also you get to build like soft skills and technical skills at the same time that will help you, you know, propel yourself in the future. It's great to hear that you were a part of the astronomy club.
I agree.
So what steps did you take that led to your current role?
Yeah, so unlike, I guess, a lot of the fields that people pursue after their PhD in astronomy, science communication is, I guess, a little bit of a newer field that people are going into. And so to get into that field, there isn't really a straightforward path. And one of the reasons for that is, you know, it requires things like having the space science background, being able to understand and process the research that is happening, because a lot of the time you're communicating that research to, it could be anyone, it could be like, you know, a third grader, to members of public. And sometimes we even talk to the members of parliament. So, you know, your audience changes. And so my path was really, actually, it started with the STEM club, where I was in the outreach director position. And, you know, I got to work with a lot of different kinds of people, talk to them about, you know, why space is awesome. And when I was in my master's, my PhD, initially, when I got into my master's, I wasn't really thinking about joining a club or doing anything else, because I was really wanting to concentrate on my research. But an opportunity came around where, you know, they were starting a podcast, like, you know, called Western Worlds. And they required someone to edit the episodes. And I was like, okay, I don't have to talk. So, you know, because again, I was still very, I guess, you know, very worried about how people were, you know, listening to my accent. Are they laughing? Are they thinking about it? You know, things like that. I was still not over it that people, you know, on World Wide Web might be might be listening to my voice and not laughing about it, you know. Mm-hmm. But as they go back end stuff, I can do editing and whatever else you want me to do, you know. And so that's actually where it started. I realized that as soon as I started that, they really liked the work that I was doing. And they're like, oh, would you want to get paid to do this? And I was like, wow, sure. Okay, yeah, sure. Why not, right? And I said yes. And then they're like, well, so you will also have to go into classrooms and do workshops. And I was like, okay, well, I've never done that. You know, I mean, like, I'm already very concerned about how people, you know, are thinking about the way I talk and, you know, and they're like, oh, don't worry, like, you'll be fine. It's just, you know, young kids, they're always curious. All they'll do is ask you questions and you have to answer. And they'll be very basic. So it's not like something to be afraid of. Mm-hmm. And I did that for the first time and I absolutely loved it. And so, and I told them that, oh my God, this is amazing. Like, keep giving me more of these, you know? And mm-hmm. so since then, that was basically in 2012. Since then, every year, they basically hired me as a teaching assistant, which is a paid position as part of your graduate program. And mm-hmm. they kept giving me outreach, which was amazing because then I started to develop all of these different skills that I needed to, you know, be where I am right now. And, you know, over the years, the 4 years I did my PhD, every year I was doing, you know, 30, 40 events a year. And so when I graduated, I was like, you know, this is a great field to go into. And so I started actually asking around to see if people have any job opportunities for me. And turned out, as soon as I graduated, the job that I'm in right now, where I'd actually worked since 2012, the place where I had volunteered and, you know, TA'd for a long time, was hiring someone full time. And I was like, well, I've been around for a while, you know, and have had the experience. And so that's really how I landed this position, is, you know, doing volunteer work and being open to kind of, you know, new opportunities and saying yes to things which I wouldn't have, you know, generally said yes to.
Wow, that's amazing. That's one thing I'm learning and just trying to do more, saying yes instead of no. Sometimes people will tap you on the shoulder, like, hey, you know, can you do X, Y, and Z? Deep down, you really don't want to do it, but you know it's a good opportunity that, you know, it will help you down the line.
So. Yeah, I think it is very hard to get out of your comfort zone just because you know you don't know what is going to happen. But mm-hmm. I've realized that the reason why I'm here today is for saying a lot of those yeses when I was not comfortable.
Yes, yes. And just knowing that, you know, someone saw something in you, that's why they tapped you on the shoulder to perform that role. So it's good to have those, I guess, sponsors in a sense to help you move forward out of your comfort zone.
Yeah, I call them champions. Like, these mm-hmm. are, like, I have champions and cheerleaders. That's what I say. Yes, a lot yes. of people, like my close-knit group, I have a lot of people who are my champions, some who are real cheerleaders, and then some who are, like, mentors. These are people, like, you know, who are always supporting you. And you know, those are the people who will show you different opportunities. And mm-hmm. they're, like you said, you know, they're the people who would see things in you that you don't see in yourself.
Yes, yes, definitely. So now that you've been, you know, you've been working for a while, can you speak to any challenges that you face in your career, how you address the challenges, and if ultimately they helped you move forward in your career?
Yeah, so this is a good question. You know, I have been working full time since, you know, 2016, so it's been 4 years. I think one thing, it's kind of still the same that I had the issue when I was young, was I don't see as many women like me in the field still, you know, mm-hmm. Which we all know that it takes time to do that. But it's at the same time, I feel like it's, you know, like 20 years now, you know, yeah. And when I was young, I was searching for those kind of people. Yeah, there are people around, but it's not, there's so less of them. And not everyone is, you know, on the internet, not everyone is out there talking about it. So it's very hard mm-hmm. to find those kind of people around you. So, you know, that's, I think, one of the things that I've faced the most in my career is finding someone in my field who looks like me, hasn't gone through kind of similar circumstances, you know. Mm-hmm. And frankly, I haven't really found one person who is doing exactly like that, who is, you know, would have gone through, but I have multiple different people for different aspects, that I can relate to, that I can call, I guess I can call them mentors in a way that, I try to understand their experience and their process of how they deal with things and kind of use that as kind of a lesson for me. So if I were to encounter something, this is what I would do. These are the things other people have done. So I think one of the most important challenge, or I guess the biggest challenge that has been in my career, is just finding some other, person of color doing space outreach, in this set of the hemisphere, I guess. I found a few, which is great. And, a lot of those are my friends, very close friends. But it's a very small pool.
Yes, I'm glad that you touched that. That was one of my main reasons of starting the podcast, just to kind of highlight successful people of color, to hear their stories, because I know for sure there's that one undergraduate student who is struggling in a specific class and probably thinking of, I'm going to drop my major, switch out of it. I don't see anyone like me, but them hearing our stories, how we overcame, how we were successful. I really hope that, it reaches people and inspires them to continue on their journey and look up to us as, inspiration that, hey, they went through this, I can do it too.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And I think I have met so many students, which I did not realize at start, but they come up to me after talks and stuff that I do, being like, oh, like, we never knew someone like us who looks like us can be doing something like this. And I was like, oh, I've never, this was a few years ago. I'm like, I've never thought about it that way, So there are people who look up to people like us who are like, doing something that they have never heard before, and that this is something that can be an inspiration to them.
Thank you. So I've released 3 episodes already, and I noticed a common theme from speaking with our guests is imposter syndrome. Have you ever dealt with that in your career? And if so, how did you overcome it?
I love this question because you are right. Imposter syndrome, once you get going in your career, it's just very hard to avoid that. I guess ever since my undergrad, I have felt the imposter syndrome, and I can tell you why. Even even a couple of weeks ago, I was on a panel with these amazing science communicators from across North America, and I'm sitting there being like, wow, these people have so many achievements, and like, I don't. And everyone was like, no, you do. and that's the thing, like, everyone you think is better than you. And that's just how our human nature is, right? If someone does better at something, being like, oh, I'm left behind. Obviously, people have different journeys, and people have different, skills, strengths, qualities. But it's very hard to let your mind and your brain kind of, process that. So imposter syndrome is very common. I've dealt with that throughout my career. And I think the one way, I don't think I have overcome it. I think I constantly struggle with it. But the way I kind of keep myself in check is that, A, recognizing that, yes, I can have an imposter syndrome, when I'm sitting on a panel being like, oh, wow, I'm sitting with like these bunch of people that are like way ahead. Just knowing that, so that your brain is in check, being like, yep, okay, I know that you are thinking this way, but you should not be thinking, and here are the reasons why. And then the other thing, I think there are a couple of two things that I definitely do. At the end of every calendar year, this is something my friend suggested. She's like, write down everything you have done, the number of events you did, the number of engagements you did, your achievements. And, when you list those things down, and it's very subjective. The other day, someone was like, oh, what does winning mean to you? And I'm like, well, it could mean like getting through my to-do list today. That's a win. Yep. It could be a hard day, and that is a win. And so, if you list things that you think you really excelled at for that year, that really helps you kind of, you know, get into the new year with the new, you know, mindset being like, yeah, so I did XYZ last year. I'm pretty sure I can do ABC, you know, for the next year. And then last but not the least, I really like having a great, you know, I kind of hinted this in our conversation before as well, having a good network support, you know, having those people around you who are your champions, people who are your cheerleaders, people who are your mentors, your friends, your family. And, you know, it's always good to tell them and talk to them about imposter syndrome, letting them know that, yeah, I do feel like in a room of people that, oh, like, why am I here? You know, and I feel that. And a lot of the time, a lot of family members and friends who aren't probably in the same situation may not understand. But once you tell them that, you know, I do feel this, most of the time people would be like, be very supportive, be like, no, look how much you have done. Or like, look, you know, you did this, like, that's great. You know, those kinds of support system is very important. And once you have that, you know, even if you're battling with imposter syndrome, they help to remind you that, no, you are supposed to be where you are. You are totally worth, you know, sitting in the chair that you are sitting in. And so I would suggest everyone to have a great support network.
Yes, I totally agree. And writing down your accomplishments, I do something similar as well. Usually like for work, if someone sends me an email, you know, congratulating me on a milestone or giving me props on something I did, I immediately save it to a folder called important. So, you know, whenever, you know, imposter syndrome creeps in, I automatically go to that folder and just read all through like my accomplishments, my congratulations to like inspire me and to let me know like, hey, Shade, you know, you did well on this project, you did well on this milestone, you know, you can do well again. And then I definitely believe, you know, having a great support system, that's such a major key. And for any professionals who are listening, if you have any like employee resource groups at your corporation, definitely join. You know, I know as people of color, you know, we go through different things in our workforce. So having that support system, you know, at work will definitely be a great benefit.
I totally agree. You know, just as a quick example, recently, like, you know, where I work, we did not have any, you know, we have this association that we're a part of as a staff. But we recently launched a BIPOC network because we're like, you know, there are only so many of us, you know, we should A, know about each other, B, like be always there for each other, because, you know, things we go through is very different from other people. So, you know, always try and find those groups wherever you go, whether it's school, your work, you know, your friends, family, all of those kinds of network.
Definitely. So our next question, so as a person of color STEMinist, we sometimes find ourselves as the only person of color in the room. Have you ever felt that you had to change yourself to be accepted? And what is a great way to stand out and be seen as a asset on your work team?
Yeah, that's something I think a lot of us go through, no matter what stage of life you are.
Yes.
You know, and I think what I said, you know, as my start of my journey here in Canada, a lot of the stuff that I did, I kind of changed myself in many ways so that I get accepted, you know. Now, you know, it's a lot of the time people tell me, oh, you don't have an accent, you know, like this is such a common thing that I get from people. And I'm like, well, you know, in my unconscious mind, I may have been pressing to kind of, you know, make that change because I felt like people wouldn't understand me if I wasn't speaking their language, right? So I think there were so many unconscious things that I did that I changed myself to be, you know, accepted or to fit into the community. I don't think I've willingly ever done anything to change myself because I don't think I should. Do any of that. I did always, you know, I always come in with passion and enthusiasm for whatever. Otherwise, I don't feel like I should be there anyways, you know, whether it's a conference, a meeting, or, you know, any kind of training, I go in with that, you know, be like, I'm excited, let's do this, you know? I want to learn XYZ. Those kinds of things generally outshine anything. So, you know, if you're afraid of something, just think of yourself as being excited about it, you know? Mm-hmm. They actually both have a very similar kind of effects on your body in terms of, like, you know, you will feel that giddiness in your stomach if you're like really afraid of a presentation, but you can also mm-hmm. get the same feeling when you're very excited about something. Mm-hmm. And so I always try and like bring that passion and enthusiasm to whatever I'm going to. And generally that helps me kind of set myself apart in a way that, you know, I'm coming in with that, whether or not people want it, coming in with that, you know. And it generally is a great asset because even if you're an introvert, it is so easy to just show enthusiasm about whatever you're doing. And that generally catches people's eyes, you know? Mm-hmm. So if you want to be that person on a team who wants to be the team, person who works with everyone collaboratively on the team, or wants to be that person who outshines the rest of the team, really the only thing that's going to make a difference is the amount of passion and enthusiasm that you bring, because everyone else can bring the same kind of knowledge, you know, everyone can have the same degree and they bring in the same kind of courses that you took and everyone else on the team took, right? So like, how do you mm-hmm. stand out? Well, the thing that you can make yourself stand out is by saying, you know, I'm like really excited about this, and bring that creativity into whatever you are saying with enthusiasm. And that should be good enough for you to, you know, even if you're a person of color, to stand out in a room full of 100 people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one thing I would like to add of being enthusiasm, also being curious and asking questions.
Yep.
If you see something interesting or you want to, you know, add input or need clarification, ask questions. That would definitely, you know, pique people's interest on your team to show that, wow, you know, they're really passionate and want to learn more about this topic or subject. So
yeah,
definitely a great way.
I agree.
So looking back at your accomplishments and your journey, what advice would you give to your younger self?
Oh, it's a tricky one because it changes every few months, you know, when I realize something, I'm like, oh, I should have like known this, you know, like when I was young. But I think one thing I would want to say to my younger self is, in terms of academia, like in terms of my STEM journey, I would mm-hmm. say, you know, you were too late to learn coding. You should have done that in high school. You know, that's one thing that I think I spent an entire summer. I took a summer off from school just to learn coding because I was like, I don't understand any of these courses. What's going on? Like, I need to take like literally a summer off to understand what's going on. But I think I could have been much further in my journey in STEM if I had known that earlier. And then I think in general, I guess, you know, especially during the start of my journey and when I was very young, I was passionate, but I wasn't really like, I was enthusiastic on my like own, you know, self, but that's like, I wasn't really talking to other people or showing my enthusiasm and passion about it to other people. So I guess I would say, you know, open up, talk to other people, you know, mm-hmm. get them excited about what you were excited. I think that would be one thing about my younger self that I wish like I had known that it would make a lot of difference if I were to talk about it. And if I were to, you know, share what I knew and what my passions were very early on.
That's cool. What coding languages did you learn?
So when I started learning, I learned a lot because I was like, oh, I need all of them. So I did like C, C++, you know, I like did this whole bunch 4-month course with like Java and SQL and all of these scripts. And then I ended up kind of actually using MATLAB the most for my master's and my PhD, actually even for undergrad. But yeah, like I started with C, like I started with a very, very old, even Fortran, and yeah,
oh,
pretty
wow.
old. That dates me.
Fortran, that, yeah, that's old. So for our listeners, what is your one major tip or advice for them how to win in STEM?
I think my one tip, I guess, is from my experience. And I think if I were to do anything else than what I was passionate about, you know, if let's say if I were to be like, no, you know, like I'll go do, you know, business or something, but not astronomy, which I was passionate about, I think I would have regretted, but also at the same time, I wouldn't have been as excited about life as I am now. So I think my tip would be go for what you're passionate about, go for what makes you, you know, excited, go for what is, you know, things that you think about at night, being like, oh, you know, how would it be to do something like this? Those are the things that your gut is telling you to do. I think those are the things that are going to make you the most happiest. So even if it's just, you know, let's say doing things for your hobby, like, you know, for example, for a lot of people, astronomy is a hobby, you know, looking at the night sky. And if that is something that you're passionate about, go for it. Like, don't wait for other people to tell you whether or not you can do it. And that's one of the ways, especially in STEM, because you have to have, you gotta know and you gotta be excited about what you're learning. Otherwise, you know, it's not as much fun. And so if you're not excited about it, you're not going to be winning. You're just going to be cruising through is what I say, you know,
cruise in order control.
Yeah. You're going to be cruising through, and to win, you got to be passionate. You got to be excited about what you're doing. And it's very true for STEM compared to other, you know, areas of fields that you could go into. So if you don't do anything that you're passionate about, it's going to start running down on you a lot.
Yes, yes. You have to be passionate. You have to be hungry for it. I totally agree.
Yeah.
So thank you so much, Dr. Patel, for spending time with us today. You shared valuable insight on your experiences, and I know our listeners would truly benefit from it because I surely did. Can you share with our listeners where we can connect with you?
Yeah, thank you for having me, first of all. You know, I really enjoyed talking about different aspects of, you know, my life and how it has been like a journey for me as a person of color. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Parshadi Patel. You can visit my website at parshadipatel.com, or you can also connect with me on Facebook. On Facebook, I'm at Space Geek Parsh. And so any of those, feel free to, you know, send me a message. I would love to hear from you.
Great. Thank you. So I'll include all that information in the podcast description. For our first time podcast listeners, please make sure that you subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor, Google Podcasts to hear our episodes first when they're released. And if you're on Instagram, make sure to follow Dr. Patel and also the Win in STEM podcast. And then once again, thank you so much, Dr. Patel, for spending time with us and sharing insight. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in. Happy holidays. I know Thanksgiving is around the corner. Enjoy your time with your friends and family. And until next time, y'all be great and go out and win in STEM. Thank you.